You're listening to a resource from the Association of Certified Biblical Counselors, where we seek to promote excellence in biblical counseling. For more resources or to find out more information about ACBC, please visit us at biblicalcounseling.com.
So we threw in that last stanza, which was written by Bob Coughlin. I don't know if any, was that familiar to some of you or new? Yeah. And I was thinking about that song in particular to our session. Can you see me okay if I sit? All right, good. I tell you, I stepped on a splinter. I won't tell you how bad it was, but it was bad. So a stool is appreciated today. But that last stanza of that song just reminded me of the psalmist always has this kind of lifelong look. And we're going to look at Psalm 71 here in a few minutes where he talks about, you know, the Lord was with him before he was born and right through the time of his older years, looking forward to eternity. And I was thinking about this song that we just sang in regards to that. So, well, my name's Jim Korber, and I pastor a church in Beaver Creek, Ohio, not far from Cedarville University. Anybody have Cedarville students or go to Cedarville? All right, so we should have an alumni gathering later, right? But privileged to be there, lead the biblical counseling ministry. Several years ago, when I was at Westminster, Dr. Powelson asked me to write on the issue of aging and counseling those who are aging and those who are suffering while they're aging, because that's a growing population. So I actually didn't want to write about that, but he really insisted, and I'm glad he did, because it was a real privilege to study that topic. But one of the things that I came across was how families are interacting with those who are aging. And that's an interesting topic to think about, and that's what our subject of our topic is today. You know, I was thinking, I think when they were asking for proposals for breakout sessions, I don't think we knew yet what the topic was for our conference. So this doesn't directly relate to suicide and self-harm, but I was thinking, and I was looking at statistics, and they're just not helpful. If you read some statistics, you find that in the aging population, there is a higher percentage of suicide, but it depends on where you start that point. And so they weren't really helpful as far as our concerns today, other than to note they're not exempt from self-harm and suicide, and not particularly self-harm, other than perhaps not caring for themselves, but certainly suicide. And I was thinking about that. Well, I have a direct connection with that. When I was 7 or 8, my parents never asked me if you want to go to Bible camp. They just said, get in the car, we're going, right? You know, I hear parents say, we asked little Johnny if he wanted to go to camp, and he doesn't want to go this year. I never had that discussion. So one year when I was at camp, the old fellow across the street, he's well into his 90s, he was an atheist. He said the Bible was for children and women, and it was filled with fairy tales. He had immigrated from Poland. He was an extraordinary man, gifted. He had all these leather belt kind of system in his barn where he actually machined things the old-fashioned way. And we would talk for hours, and he would show me how to do things. Well, while I was gone, he committed suicide because life was hopeless. And he did it while I was gone on purpose because he knew that that would really affect me. And it did. I mean, it was really traumatic to think that he was gone and how he had, you know, not known the Lord. That was the hardest part. But so the aging culture, they're not exempt from it. So, you know, be aware of that as you talk with aging relatives. You know, make sure that you're listening well to hear, you know, for any signs of withdrawing or, you know, are they even talking about suicide, all the things that you're learning here at the conference. But as we think about counseling families with aging relatives, as you think about your generation, our generation, we're the sandwich generation. Do you know what that means? You know, we're you know, taking care of aging parents. My parents are with the Lord today. I was the youngest of my family. I was the youngest cousin. When I was 5, I was pretty convinced weekends were for funerals, and because it just seemed like that's what we were doing all the time. And so my parents are long with the Lord, but I do have aging siblings, and one in particular that we've had to care for. and you probably all have aging relatives as well, and yet we still have children in our home. And so, you know, there's a lot of stress. And even recently, we've had to care for my sister, and so you're trying to balance those needs, and she's 3 hours away, making those trips, you know, making sure things are taken care of at home. It can be overwhelming, and so this is an important topic for us to consider today. So as you think about counseling family with aging relatives, hopefully you have the notes, and I'm actually going to add to the notes, so at the end, I have a Gmail email address that you can contact me if you would like some updated notes, because I've added some things since we submitted these, and I think they're helpful. We have we want to talk a little bit about Alzheimer's, and we have a lady in our church who is actually a nurse specialist with Alzheimer's. Her grandfather died of Alzheimer's, and she's done a lot of research. And she provided me some information just in this past week that I thought would be helpful. I want to pass that along to you. So, well, Paul counsels us in 1 Thessalonians 5:14, and we're going to look at that here in a minute, to be patient with people as we admonish, encourage, and help. He talks about love in 1 Corinthians 13. We're going to take a look at that in a few minutes here, to be patient and kind. And we want to exemplify this kind of patience. Yeah, because this is something that we're all called to do. And so as we think about our aging relatives, that can be hard and it can be difficult. And I think it becomes difficult because age creeps up on us, right? And so, you know, your diminished hearing, you know, cognitive abilities, you're slower. Anybody drive slower today than they did 30? I mean, I do. My kids tell me I do, and I do. But, you know, all of these things are taking place, but they don't take place overnight. And so all of a sudden, people are like, who is this person? And they're frustrated with them, and they can be angry and lack patience, when really what we should be doing with our aging relatives is listening well, watching, observing, and being patient with them. Let me kind of give you a scope of the dynamics of what's taking place in our culture. Right now, the fastest growing age group are those. Anybody want to venture a guess, the fastest growing age group? 80, 90, and above, right? And certainly that 65-plus category is just growing significantly. And you know that because you just watch the commercials on TV, right? And, you know, they know who their market is. And so, and yet, the 18 to 64 category is doing what? Shrinking. Yeah, you know, that's percentage of population. So that has all kinds of implications, as you think about it. So, and as you think about those implications, they're going to come to the church as well. Yesterday, we recorded a Truth and Love podcast, and we were talking about some of these statistics and thinking just out loud about the church and where we're at today. I think one of the things you should be encouraged about is, thinking of Heath Lambert's book on the biblical counseling movement, we're really maturing as a movement to the point where when I was growing up, my pastor always said to us, you know, I counsel marriage, but I send all the hard cases out, right? And that's what was taught in seminary. And so, but today we're coming to a point now where we're aging, right? And we're committed to biblical counseling. So there's a lot of hope, but past generations haven't sought the church out for help, right? But I think that's going to change. So this is a huge opportunity for us as our churches age and as we have opportunity with people and have opportunity to help people who are helping people who are aging. So some of the cultural changes, I just want to run through these quickly just for you to think about, that are taking place in our culture that impact your aging relatives. Higher divorce rates today, or no divorce rates, or lower divorce rates because of people just not getting married, right? That has implications. So immorality, smaller families with fewer children, or aging children. That's a huge issue for people. Grandparents raising children. That's a huge issue as well. A utilitarian view of people. And so Medicare, Medicaid, the hospital boards that have to make decisions, they're not thinking image bearer. They're thinking cost. They're thinking utility as far as abilities. And an example of that, My wife's grandmother was denied a surgical procedure because they said it would have no value for her because of her age. I mean, it was really, I couldn't believe we read it, but I mean, it was a very utilitarian letter. Now, in the end, we argued it and she did get the surgery, but that's the kind of thinking that's out there. So the world often, and you often hear this in churches, and we often hear it maybe even from your parents, oh, I don't want to be any burden, right? That's a very utilitarian way of thinking, and so we want to recognize that your theology, your image of God theology, you know, how you view man is going to be very important as you think about coming alongside those who are suffering in their later years. Abandonment of Judeo-Christian guardrails for moral foundations, that's taking place all around us. I think Al Mohler talks about it all the time on his, you know, briefing, and he just talks about these mega shifts in our culture that have taken place in years, where it used to take millennia for some of these changes to take place. And so these are all taking place all around us. Ageism, and so those who are older are no longer treated with respect, and that's taking place all across our culture. And then, of course, increased exploitation of aging. Anybody see that or experience that with your loved ones? And, you know, that slick salesman who's got the best hearing aid and drives off with $5,000 of your loved one's money, and it's really no better than any other hearing aid, right? So it's taking place. So can you think of any other cultural changes that are affecting your loved ones or those who are aging? Yes. Right. Is she on Facebook?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, right.
She's one of the ones that's actually on the computer.
Yeah.
But all the changes she did in the last 4 years, I've seen it still happen so fast, it's just mind-boggling.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So think about that with your, as you think about information, being patient and kind and observing. These are the things that are putting the heat and pressure of life on your loved one. There's church culture changes, right? Can you think of some ways your church has changed? Yes. Yeah. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. That's true, and we're coming through a period of time where, falling apart here, sorry, where that was a value, right? Pull yourself up by your, you know, bootstraps and take care of yourself. But what do we see the younger people now today are searching for community, right? So that's an opportunity too. But no, you're right. There's this independent mindedness. I mean, I've heard that often. I don't want to be a burden. And then also, you know, there's kind of a withdrawing from society because of, you know, just this cultural value of being independent. So I don't want people to know my business. So, yeah. So one more. Suicide. That's right. Helping people. Right. Yep. So, yeah, absolutely. I don't know. It's more than Oregon now, isn't it? Yeah. I think Maine even, which I'm from New England. That just sort of shocks me. I don't know. It's just strange. Some church changes. In churches, they're inclined towards age-segregated ministry. And I'd just like to say probably for this group, we're like, well, yeah, because we have all these graded classes. That seems normal to us. That wasn't normal 150 years ago, right? And by the way, that cuts against the grain of what scriptures teach, doesn't it? The older teaching the younger. Why are we splitting everybody up? So I remember going traveling home from church one Sunday night, and there was an older gentleman who would pray even with the younger guys. And I remember our son Jonathan saying, Dad, I want to pray just like Haskell. And Haskell's with the Lord, and he never did pray like Haskell, because Haskell prayed with the King James, you know, these and thous. But I think what he meant was with the passion and love that Haskell. So how do young people learn? Well, by the older teaching the younger. So this inclination towards age-segregated ministries is something we see, and hopefully we're correcting in a lot of churches. Often older church buildings are not very accommodating for the aging, right? steps and narrow hallways, bathrooms that are difficult to get around in. Churches have demographic targeting of younger families, right? And so it often comes with a lack of intentional ministry to the aging and thinking about the aging in our society. And oftentimes, if there's seniors ministries taking place in church, they're usually more like clubs that are planning a trip to see the Creation Museum, right? Which is a good place to go, but I mean, let's take those younger people and make sure that they're integrated with those older people and make sure they're integrated within the church. So church cultural changes are taking place. So your aging relatives then have also lived through the best years of U.S. history. When you think about it, we are in decline. And so that's, my parents always said, we just wanted a better life for you, right? I mean, I heard that all the time. And like I said, I grew up, my family was a World War II era family. Like I said, I was the youngest cousin, and they had a lot of experience. It just, they wanted something different for their children, which is a good thing. That's waning quickly. So, and they had no control over that. So there's a lot of older people who are grieving, watching what's taking place in our culture, watching what's taking place on the news, and a lot of them are discouraged and depressed and feel like something is lost, and that they're losing something that they worked hard for, perhaps. All right, so materialism, all of these things have invaded our aging population. Man-centered thinking, a denial of aging projects or products everywhere. Right, and I'm not saying hair color is bad. I'm not saying that some of these things that help, but some of these things are being used to maintain an illusion, that this life is all that we have, or that somehow you can get earth or here on earth get heavenly rewards now, when what we should be doing is giving ourselves with abandon right into our final years. Yes. Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah, that's right. So even the songs that we sing. And that's important because Colossians and Ephesians talks about singing psalms, hymns, and spiritual songs. And when that can't take place, there's something lost there. So good. Thank you. All right. So as you think about all these pressures that are coming your way, as they're coming to your aging relatives' way, you can see there's a lot there. And, we kind of live in it every day, and I don't think we necessarily think about the significance of it, but it really is significant, these changes and the pressure that's taking place on our loved ones. So we need to keep those things in mind. All right, so historical placement, I just talked about the fact that we are in a day and age where we're in decline, and that's hard on our loved ones. So, you've already shared what you're seeing out there, but you see all of the pressures that are taking place. So here, I want to read to you from Ecclesiastes chapter 11. So if you would turn there, because this is a biblical counseling conference, right? So I grade exams, and sometimes somebody will, answer a question with no scripture. So if you're writing exams, make sure you put the Bible in there, right? All right. So let me begin in verse 9. It says, "Rejoice, O young man, in your youth, and let your heart cheer you in the days of your youth. Walk in the ways of your heart in the sight of your eyes. But know that for all these things, God will bring you into judgment." So that's a warning, isn't it? And so be careful. One of the best ways to be counseling an older generation is by starting counseling the younger generation. And I remember talking with a dear brother in the Lord who's now in his 80s. And I asked him, I said, "Art, what scriptures encourage you today in your older years?" And he said, "The same ones that encouraged me in my younger years," right? So there's a really important principle there to keep in mind, to remember the Lord in your youth. In verse 10, he says, "Remove vexation from your heart and put away pain from your body, for youth and the dawn of life are vanity. Remember also your Creator in the days of your youth, before the evil days come and the years draw near, of which you will say, I have no pleasure in them. Before the sun and the light and the moon and the stars are darkened and the clouds return after the rain. And so notice that we're moving in a direction as we read through this passage towards death. And think about darkness drawing in. As he gives some of these examples, you'll see that he's talking about, physical decay. So he says in verse 3, in the day when the keepers of the house tremble, and the strong men are bent and the grinders cease because they are few. Anybody lose any teeth? And those who look through the windows are dimmed, eyesight diminishing. And the doors of the street are shut. When the sound of the grinding is low, and one rises up at the sound of a bird, and all the daughters of song are brought low. They are afraid also of what is high, and terrors are in the way. And the almond tree blossoms, the grasshopper drags itself along, and desire fails because man is going to his eternal home, and the mourners go about the streets. Before the silver cord is snapped, or the golden bowl is broken, or the pitcher is shuttered at the fountain, or the wheel broken at the cistern, and the dust returns to the earth, and it was and the spirit returns to God who gave it. Vanity of vanities, says the preacher, all is vanity. And so we see this direction in these later years of life, so dimming eyes, losing teeth, afraid of falling, not hearing as well. All of these things are taking place. So this is some of the heat, the cultural changes, the physical changes that aging relatives and all of us are experiencing those, right? And I see a wide variety of age groups in here. And I just said to somebody the other day, I'm starting to make the noises my dad made, right? And we understand this. We get it, especially those of us who are in our older years. And so if you're in that sandwich generation and you have older relatives, you can start to have some compassion and understand what they're experiencing a little bit. All of these things are taking place. So onset of debilitating disease, terminal diseases, diseases that affect the mind, lingering diseases. We live longer with diseases today than in the past, which I'm glad to live longer, but honestly, there's many people who are suffering longer today. Loneliness because of singleness or a death of a spouse. Regrets that are amplified by diminishing time to resolve those problems. That can be a huge issue as you talk with your loved ones. Just multiplied losses. John Piper, Legan Duncan, and some others were having a roundtable conversation. I remember John Piper saying that 60s is the decade of losses. And that may be different for different people, but at least for him, that was true. So there's a loss of income. Especially because a lot of people didn't plan to live so long, right? There's a loss of acuity, of senses, hearing, sight, feeling, taste, smell. My grandmother said to my wife and I when she was 87 years old, I'm going to quit smoking. And I said, why? I mean, I shouldn't have said that. But, the fact of the matter is she just didn't have a taste for it anymore, right? It just wasn't of interest. It wasn't that she had made some kind of new commitment. So... strength and abilities, mobility, continence can be a huge issue. I had a family member who stopped going to church, and everybody was upset. Why aren't you going to church anymore? And they thought it was a spiritual issue. And the incontinence was just so bad because of his cancer that he just couldn't go. And when we learned that, then we were able to help and have some greater compassion. But we should have, and this is kind of the part of the discussion today, we should have sought to learn a little bit more before we came to conclusions, right? So, you already mentioned independence, right? A desire for independence. And what we should be promoting is a desire for community and a humility that says, I'm willing to let somebody help. That's a good model for a younger generation. Family, so as you think about that kind of change, there's a lot of grieving, exasperation over problems with extended family, especially adult children and grandchildren who are not walking with the Lord, perhaps, right? So Also, fears. Here are some of the fears as I interviewed people. The big fear is, will I get Alzheimer's? That was like number one, with good reason, because that is a very likely scenario, some kind of dementia, if you live past 80. I mean, the you know, what do they call it? The hockey stick effect on a chart, it goes very high. So, again, lost loved ones without Christ. Will I suffer or endure suffering for a long time? That's the third fear that I ran into. So, all right, so those are some of the pressures that people are facing today. Ageism, we've already mentioned that. I'd like to turn our attention to another passage, though, Psalm 71. This is what we would hope for our loved ones. And again, so as you're thinking about your own aging, as you think about those who are watching you, as you're thinking about wanting to speak the truth to your loved ones, because you should, we're going to talk about that shortly here. I really appreciate what the psalmist says in Psalm 71. We don't know who wrote it. Sounds like David a little bit, but it's not ascribed to him. But it says, "In you, O Lord, do I take refuge." This is Psalm 71. "Let me never be put to shame. In your righteousness, deliver me and rescue me. Incline your ear to me and save me. Be to me a rock of refuge to which I may continually come. You have given the command to save me, for you are my rock and my fortress. Rescue me, O my God, from the hand of the wicked, from the grasp of the unjust and cruel man. For you, O Lord, are my hope, my trust, O Lord, from my youth. Upon you I have leaned from before my birth. You are he who took me from my mother's womb. My praise is continually of you." So I want to stop there before I continue. Notice that he recognizes his dependence on the Lord even in his youth. Even before he was born, he recognizes that every breath he takes is a gift from the Lord. A lot of young people don't recognize that, right? We probably didn't recognize that when we were young. And so the psalmist is just recognizing that he, from the very beginning, has been dependent on the Lord. And then he says in, verse 6, "Upon you I lean from my birth. You are he who took me from my mother's womb. My praise is continually of you. I have been as a portent to many, but you are my strong refuge. My mouth is filled with your praise and with your glory all the day. Do not cast me off in the time of old age. Forsake me not when my strength is spent." And so he's going to the Lord with confidence that he won't, right? And he goes on and he says, "For my enemies speak concerning me. Those who watch for my life consult together and say, 'God has forsaken him. Pursue and seize him, for there is none to deliver him.' O God, be not far from me. O my God, make haste to help me. May my accusers be put to shame and consumed with scorn and disgrace. May they be covered who seek my hurt. But I will hope continually and will praise you yet more and more. My mouth will tell of your righteous acts, of your deeds of salvation all the day. For their number is past my knowledge. With the mighty deeds of the Lord God I will come. I will remember them of your righteousness, yours alone. Remind them of your righteousness, yours alone." See, I'm showing my aging by my eyesight, right? I didn't do that on purpose. "Oh God, from my youth you have taught me, and I still proclaim your wondrous deeds. So even to old age and gray hairs, O God, do not forsake me until I proclaim your might to another generation, your power to all those to come." So this is kind of preaching to us, and as you think, sometimes you might have some aging relatives who are beyond this. But what I want to encourage you is have this hope for those that you're ministering to and still present them with the truth and help them to accomplish this goal, as he says here in verse 18, that they would be proclaiming God's might to another generation, like that old fellow Haskell who prayed with our son, who, by the way, was blind. He had macular degeneration. He couldn't see forward. He used to sneak out and drive the tractor out in the field, and his wife would get very upset with him about that. But just suffering and struggling with that, and yet he would pray with at that time, 13, 14-year-old young man. So that's what we'd like to see. So as we think about a passage like that, we want to remind ourselves that our goal is to help those who are believers, especially, to be helping them to finish well. So we want to be thinking about how we can help them accomplish that. Psalm 92:15 is another good passage. I think you've got these on the screen here. Yeah. It says the in beginning in verse 12, that is, the righteous flourish like the palm tree and grow like a cedar in Lebanon. They are planted in the house of the Lord. They flourish in the courts of our God. Now notice there's fruit bearing taking place here, but notice that they're, where are they? What's the location? The courts of the Lord, right? They're doing this in the covenant community. That's a real important principle, and we'll come back and talk about that at the end of our session, talking about some practical things. But notice that they're not doing this alone. There's not an independent-mindedness here. They're doing this in the courts of the Lord. They still bear fruit in old age. They are ever full of sap and green. To declare, so here's the purpose, to declare that the Lord is upright. He is my rock, and there is no unrighteousness in him. And so our desire is that they would finish well, and we want to help them accomplish that. All right, so moving on to, can you go to the next slide, Abigail? Thanks. We did not practice this ahead of time, so. All right. So think in terms of your roles and responsibilities before God as you deal with aging, the aging around you. So as a spouse, and I'm thinking in two directions. If you have an aging relative and you're married, you have your roles and responsibilities to your husband or your wife, right? Also, sometimes there are people who are married to older spouses. And I have, my grandmother was 26 years younger than my grandfather. So I said I come from an old family. My grandfather was born in Ulysses S. Grant's last year as president, okay? Just give you an idea. I never knew him, obviously. But then we have a friend in our town, and her husband is about 30 years older than her. And I watched them, I don't know, about a year or two ago, we were at a dinner together, and she's my age, and he's in his 80s. And, I mean, it's just a very different scenario for her from when she married him, which he was in a lot better health then. So, you know, as a spouse, you know, we have responsibilities to love. So, you know, wives are to, you know, submit as to the Lord to their husbands. Husbands are to love their wives. That comes into play. And isn't it sweet when you see a spouse loving a relative or, you know, an aging spouse who's going through difficult times? And that's a real encouragement to the body when they see that. So as you think about spouse, think of your assignments as a spouse. As a parent, you know, as you're thinking about your children, they're watching how you treat your aging relatives. And that's a really important and you know, it's kind of scary thing to think of, right? And so we want to treat our aging relatives well and to care for them so that they have a good model of what Christ-like love looks like with that aging relative. You know, adult childs, we want to honor our parents and encourage them. And I have several others here that aren't in your notes. So friends, you may have people who are older who have no relatives left. Anybody ever have some older friends who have no relatives left? And they need people to care for them. And so you might be their friend and come alongside. Sibling, I mentioned I have an older sister, and we're caring for her needs. And I'll just be, I'm just amazed at how the Lord has grown her and helped shape her to become more like Christ in all of this. You know, we thought we were going to have some difficult conversations about taking away a vehicle. And she just called me one day and she says, you know, I think the Lord would have me just give up driving. And we're like, I mean, that's the Lord, right? And so the Lord can change people. Now she's in a good, solid church. And that's significant to think about as you consider your loved ones. They may not be in that place. It might be a bit of a fight. Because I have another friend whose mother was calling the police every day. They stole my car. So, but yeah, so or just a brother or sister in the Lord or a neighbor, just thinking about the broad categories. So think about your roles in all of these categories. What is my responsibility before the Lord with these people that the Lord has brought my way as the Lord brings them to you? So if you don't consider your role, though, if you don't, you're going to become distorted. You need to let scriptures guide you in your thinking about your roles as a husband, as a wife, as a child. You need to keep all of that in mind as you care for people. The gospel will be distorted. You won't honor God and your relatives. And honoring your relatives always starts with honoring God, and it's not mutually exclusive. So as you think about caring for those loved ones who are going through difficult times, you need to step back and consider all of your roles and responsibilities before the Lord. I have some scenarios in here. I'm just going to let you read through those at some other time. If we have time at the end, we could come back, because I do want to come to the discussion about Alzheimer's and finding hope during that season, perhaps if you find yourself experiencing that with a loved one. How many have experienced that with a loved one? Probably, yeah, so over half. And I have as well. I have a dear friend that I meet with to disciple. I've met with him for 16 years now, and I did the funeral for his dad, who had Alzheimer's, and for his mom, who had at least some kind of dementia. And we did her funeral just about 2 years ago. But, you know, Alzheimer's is an interesting thing because in my friend's case, his dad did not recognize anyone coming into the room. His wife didn't recognize his children. He was gentle, and he wasn't violent. But on the other hand, when I would walk in the room, and I didn't visit him every day, like, you know, maybe twice a month, I'd come into the nursing home to visit with him. And as soon as he saw me, he went like this. So somehow he knew there was something still there in his mind. He knew that I was the guy who was going to come in and pray with him. And yet he didn't, you know, remember his family. And so it can be very difficult, and it's hard when people don't remember their relatives. I remember my pastor growing up, and his mom had Alzheimer's, and he used to tell the kids that they were so lucky that her son would let them live there, and that she thought they were renters, and we'd find her on the phone calling the police, and just all of the things that you face. When my dad was dying of cancer, I remember a pastor came in to visit him who was in the middle stages of Alzheimer's, and he said to my dad in his dying days, literally, he said, "Bob, if I could have your brain and you could have my body, we would be okay." And he came over to our house that day with his wife. They brought us a meal, and very kind. And something happened, and he got out of control, violent. And so they took him home, and then he ended up getting violent with his wife that night, and they had to put him in a special unit to protect her. So it's a very devastating thing for families. So my friend Mandy, who wrote to me, she just provided some really good information. So I'll read some of this. Again, if you send me an email, I'll provide you some of these notes. But Alzheimer's disease is the most common type of dementia and is expected to triple over the next 3 decades. That's pretty significant. That's just because we're an aging culture. Right now, there are approximately 5.8 million Americans living with Alzheimer's disease. And 16 million people are serving as their unpaid caregivers. That's just a huge number, and that's a lot of people who are suffering. It's the sixth leading cause of death with no known treatment or cure. And that's why I talked to Mandy. I said, what's new on the horizon? Because I haven't looked at statistics in several years, and I know there's been some advances, but there really haven't been a lot of advances in Alzheimer's, a lot of early treatment that can help prevent and delay, but not a lot of hope, at least right now, for a cure. Hopefully, putting things off. So the number one cause of Alzheimer's is old age. It's estimated that 47% of those over 85 have some kind of dementia, such as Alzheimer's. And typically, people with Alzheimer's live about 88 years with a steady decline. And so it's a journey for families as they go through that. And by the way, forgetfulness is not a sign of Alzheimer's. So if you're worried about it, but a breakdown in logical sequencing, that's, you know, really what they look like. So, you know, it makes makes logical sense to them, but there's missing pieces of information that are taking place. So some genuine changes that you might see in a loved one are memory changes that disrupt daily life, challenges in planning or solving problems, difficulty completing familiar tasks at home, at work, or at leisure, confusion with time or place, trouble understanding visual images and spatial relationships, new problems with words and speaking or writing, misplacing things and losing the ability to retrace steps. So if you've lost your keys, but you know you need your keys, you don't have Alzheimer's, okay? So I'm speaking to myself here too, okay? So decreased or poor judgment, a withdrawal from work or social activities. A lot of times people, kind of withdraw because it's just easier. They can't explain what's going on. So if you see those things, you might check it out. Changes in mood or personality. So here are some things to do. And again, you have these in your notes, I believe, but we'll add some things to it as well. Encourage your relatives to make their wishes for advanced care guided by biblical principles known while they're still of sound mind. And so if you're, with somebody, you want to help them with that. Philippians 1:21 is helpful there. For me to live is Christ, to die is gain. All these principles you want to help them think through. Help them to honor Christ while they have a sound mind. Encourage your relatives to stay active mentally. For instance, the mental skills to put a puzzle together have been found to be especially beneficial in maintaining brain function in the elderly. So those kinds of things are helpful. Talk openly and honestly about death and their fears early. I don't know. I wish Ed Welch were here, because that's the kind of stuff he studied. But there's something there that helps. So yeah. I guess because you're using all kinds of mental faculties to accomplish that. So. I'm going to venture into areas I'm not qualified to enter if I go any further. So, I can speculate, but yeah. So share the gospel if they are not believers. Be urgent about it. That's okay to be urgent about it, is to share the gospel with them anew in a renewed way. Resolve what's unresolved right away, right? If there's unresolved things, make sure you help yourself and them with those unresolved issues. Let them know of your love and specifically how they have impacted you and ministered to you, like a lot. Talk to them about those things. Ask yourself the question as you are frustrated with them, perhaps you don't understand why they're doing what they're doing. Ask yourself the question, what is the experience like for that person that's suffering? And so, be doing some self-assessment that way. Adjust your expectations appropriately and be merciful in it. So often there's like an internal logic that's taking place to the Alzheimer's patient or the person who has dementia, and it may not be apparent to you, but some examples that were given to me, running out of the bathroom when the shower comes on thinking the roof is caving in. So things that don't make sense, but for them it does. Or somebody running at them and they punch that person. Well, they didn't know who that person was, right? So there's all kinds of things. So you want to be thoughtful and think ahead. Help them avoid sinful responses. So minimize noise. Avoid flooding them with too many stimulating factors. Begin journaling things that are triggers for their behavior. So one of the things that has come out of recent studies is there seems to be a consistent pattern of triggers for those who have Alzheimer's or any kind of dementia that cause some of these behaviors that are concerning. And so start journaling those. Start writing down what's taking place when mom or dad or that relative is acting out. What was taking place before then? What was the atmosphere in the room like? Start taking note of those things, and you might find some patterns that will be helpful for you to remove or avoid to help them. Confusion with daily habits, confusion regarding the time of day, write down those kinds of things. So here are some other recommendations that a caregiver gave to me. Reminiscing with that person, help them lead in the conversation even, look at familiar pictures, personal objects. Music therapy can be very helpful, correlate that with what that person liked before. So don't bring them rap if they never listened to rap, right? So, if they liked old hymns, bring an old hymn book and sing with them, right? That would be something that would be helpful to them. Environmental modifications, think about lighting, room temperature, prevent overstimulation. So limiting sleep in the daytime hours, that can be a challenge, but you know, attempts at that. Physical activity, be patient, allow for extra time for activities. So you can think, as you're thinking about caring for that relative, whether they have Alzheimer's or not, you're going to have to plan for extra time to do things, and because it's going to take longer. Diversionary activities, so folding laundry, sweeping, mixing ingredients, do things that they've done before and are familiar with. Provide activities that the person is able or capable of completing, so don't give them things that are, going to be frustrating for them, that they'll become angry about, and modify their home for safety if they're still at home. Keep to a schedule. All of these things are just kind of practical things to do. And then involve the body of Christ. And so involve the body of Christ early. Counsel your relative to accept this help with humility. You're going to need a break, right? If you're the caregiver, you're going to need some help along the way. And you want to also give them appropriate interaction with other people along the way. Keep your other relatives safe. It could be a wife, could be, an older child living at home, whatever the case may be. Pray for them and with them regularly, and read scriptures to them regularly. All right, and I think, Abigail, I have one more slide that's not in my notes. Yeah. So I think as you think about all of these things, there's nothing new here, as far as these scriptures. You're probably very familiar with them. But Matthew 22, I want to turn your attention there. I think that has to be, in all of our counseling, a starting point. But in Matthew 22, beginning in verse 34, it says, "But when the Pharisees heard that he had silenced the Sadducees," I always picture, you ever see a WWF wrestling? We used to always watch that in the morning. And the one guy has had enough, so he tags out, right? And the new guy jumps in. And so the Pharisees jumped into the ring. He's getting ready to battle with Jesus, and he asks this question. He says, he's a lawyer, and he asks him this question to test him. "Teacher, which is the great commandment in the law?" And he said to him, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the great and first commandment, and a second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments depend all the law and the prophets." And so Jesus didn't answer just the one question. He answered it with two answers. And by the way, the Pharisee, these were headers to passages the Pharisee would have already understood. So the first one is back to Deuteronomy 6, right? In the great Shema, and loving God with your entire being. And so the first principle, as you think about loving that relative, is, am I worshiping God in how I'm treating this aging loved one, right? So, think about that as you're, struggling, and perhaps you're angry or you're struggling with some things. You're trying to assess, look at your heart and ask those x-ray questions, what do I fear? And recognize that this really is a matter of worship. And so you need to get out of your kingdom and back into God's kingdom, right? And to worship God through this time of difficulty for your loved one and for you. But then also notice he says, love your neighbor. And that takes us all the way back to Leviticus 19, where he gives us this whole list of how to love your neighbor. So be kind to the poor, be just in the courts, and all of these things. And then he finishes, and don't hate your neighbor by not being frank with him. And so there is even an appropriateness to making sure with patience and love and gentleness that you are speaking the truth to your loved one. And they may have different capacities to understand it, but you need to be functioning yourself according to the truth, and they still need to hear the truth of scriptures along the way. And so Matthew 22, 37 through 39 is a really important passage for you to keep in mind as you evaluate your care for your loved ones. The next one is 1 Thessalonians 5. I want you to turn there, and I think it was mentioned yesterday in honor of Dave Powelson. But Dave always said this should be every biblical counselor's theme verse. And so it'd be good to memorize it. But I wanted to kind of read even around these verses because I think they're important. beginning in verse 12, he says, "We ask you, brothers, to respect those who labor among you and are over you in the Lord and admonish you, and esteem them very highly in love because of their work. Be at peace among yourselves. And we urge you, brothers, admonish the idle, encourage the faint-hearted, help the weak, be patient with them all. See that no one repays anyone evil for evil." And so I think of a scene in a nursing home one day where a patient was being belligerent, and it was an older patient, probably had dementia, and the worker was so mad he shoved him into the wall, right? So it's not that it's beyond that worker or us, right, to be angry with somebody. So that's why I think even what's beyond verse 14 is helpful here. No one repays anyone evil for evil, but always seek to do good to one another and to everyone. Rejoice always, pray without ceasing, give thanks in all circumstances, for this is the will of God in Christ Jesus for you. Do not quench the Spirit. And so, you know, as you think about 1 Thessalonians 5:14 and these verses, we want to come alongside with that patience and that care and that love that represents a love for God, a love for neighbor, and then also recognizes they're image bearers and they're fellow strugglers with us as well. So we want to have that gentleness that we should have at every stage in life, even parenting, right? All right, and then finally, 1 Corinthians 13. And again, this is not unfamiliar to you. You probably have counselees memorize these verses. You should. So, but 1 Corinthians 13, and beginning in verse 4, he says, "Love is patient and kind." And I just work with those two words for, you know, some time with a counselee. You know, what does patience look like? What does patience look like in regards to that struggling, aging relative, right? It's going to take some work, but that's what true love is, and kind. So let me just kind of open this up, and we may end here because we're going to run out of time. How can you be kind to your aging relative? What are just some practical things? How can you be kind? Yes.
Well, this sounds a little strange, but it is very frustrating. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Take a break. Accept help. That is very hard. People don't want to accept help.
Yeah.
They think they should be able to handle
Right. So if you're exhausted, it might be kind to get somebody else in there to help.
Yes.
Sure. Good. Excellent. Yes.
Be a good listener,
right. In fact, Proverbs 18:13 comes to play, right? So listen well. Sometimes we're causing more problems in our help with aging people because we're just kind of plowing ahead without really listening well. So, yep, good. Yeah.
We didn't understand that he needed to have his wallet with him, even though he was like handing out money, losing his credit card, losing his wallet.
Right.
And so we took it away and put it in a drawer.
Yeah.
And he was like so beside himself because he didn't have his wallet. So we took the license and credit card out and just put like $2 in his wallet.
There you go. Yeah.
So
right.
And I
yeah.
Asking
right. Yeah.
What are you thinking? Because I said to my husband, I'm having a hard time now opening jars.
Right.
And my mom used to attack them with knives. I remember thinking.
Yeah, be careful.
I'm like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like,
with a tone of impatience.
Yeah.
And now I'm doing it.
Right.
Like, oh, mom.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Excellent. Good. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Excellent. So kind of killing two birds with one stone, right? Yeah. Good. Over here.
Ask them questions and don't just take things from them.
Right.
Because they don't think you're stealing them.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, good. I'm favoring this side. I better turn over here. So, yes.
As my children were growing up, my wife, they actually started a nursing home ministry with the kids.
Okay.
Once a month, my little bitty kids would go in. They started from 2 and 3, all the way up to 12. They'd done it for 10 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it would be people who would be there that would actually had no family.
Yeah.
But they carried pictures of my kids around showing them.
Cool.
Yeah. But the important thing for me was to see my children grew up with an understanding of a blessing of those people who just been able to spend time. And one of the most important things that I got out of that everybody's seen was my children knew how to interact.
Yeah.
And because there's so many children who are scared of people who are old.
Yeah.
Or in a wheelchair.
Mm-hmm.
Or who have dementia.
Yeah.
It's so important for them to interact.
Right.
The ages, as we said, the ages to see, to interact, and to be able to show love and to hug, you know, to crawl up in a wheelchair and hug somebody at 2 years old.
Yeah.
It just blew their mind.
Yep. You know. Great. Super. Good. One more. Yes.
I think letting them have a pet
Uh-huh. Yeah. 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 Pet therapy is huge today. So that's a kindness. If they still can read, go to the photocopier and enlarge things, you know, even bigger than their large print Bible, just all kinds. So you have to just be thoughtful and listen well so you know what their needs are. So, all right. Well, so much more could be said, hasn't been said. Again, the next slide will be my email, right? All right, so if you want some more notes, I've got more notes that I can send to you, and I'd be happy to do that. So shoot me an email, and then next week, after we get back from the conference, we'll get those off to you. So, hey, let me pray as we close our time. Father, thank you for allowing us to live in this day and age where we have opportunity across multiple generations to minister to one another. That's certainly your kindness and your goodness to us. Father, it comes with challenges. Father, it reminds us that this is not our earthly home. Father, it reminds us that there's a glorious day waiting for all of us. And so, Father, even as we counsel and help people who are suffering, as we counsel people who are helping people who are suffering, Father, it just reminds us that one day when you return, our bodies will be restored, our minds will be restored, and we will be able to worship you without all the encumbrances of the fall. And so we're thankful. And we ask all of these things in Christ's name. Amen. All right. Hey, thanks.